Welcome to the Counterculture Hour. I'm your host, V. Vail. I've been doing counterculture publishing for 30 years in San Francisco with research and starting with punk rock with Search and Destroy. Today, we're very privileged to have with us one of the American media-created godfathers of tattoo, Lyle Tuttle, who started out and became famous, really, in the 60s, and he hasn't stopped. And he's actually at the forefront contemporarily because he's a principal in tattoos.com, which is definitely probably one of the main media sources on the internet now for tattoo information, a directory of shops, things like that. So anyway, welcome to the Counterculture Hour, Lyle Tuttle.
Well, thank you for having me. I used to be hot, you know, media-wise and everything else. I always consider myself sort of now as being on the back burner and refer to myself warmly as a has-been.
Well, you've done a body of work that's going to stay in history for a long time.
That's our immortality.
It'll live beyond you. Isn't that funny?
It is. It's nice to leave a mark.
You know, I wish they would do here in this country what they did in Japan. I went to the University of Tokyo a long time ago and visited the tattoo museum, in which they would literally cut these huge tattoos out of human bodies and pickle them, and they'd be displayed like art canvases. And, hey, they should do that with you.
That's where my skin is supposedly going.
Great.
I offered it to them. Then I could tell by the looks that went between the six principals that was at the table that they was thinking, we're opening up a can of worms here. But, you know, it's a logistical thing, too, because that skin has to be taken within the first 24 hours. Mm. I could imagine the United States is fairly uptight in a whole bunch of different things, and, like, owning body parts and things is one of them. Mm. And getting somebody to skin somebody. Mm. And I could imagine my alarmist daughter thinking that her dad is going to be skinned and go to Japan. And then they asked me what would we do with the rest of it? Meaning, I said, hell, send it to the hungry people in Africa.
From man who spent his life working on the human body, I'm glad you're so kind of philosophically distanced and relatively dispassionate about the fate of your own body. I like that. I mean, isn't it weird how our identity is? Like, we kind of are our bodies, but in a weird way, we're not.
I used to run around saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I've quit it now, because you don't know what you're going to do when push comes to shove. But now I've started off, and it's not a prayer, it's just sort of a little bit talking to my body, because, you know, your mind and everything else is one entity, and your body is another entity. Mm-hmm. You can have a sharp mind, bad body, vice versa. So I sort of talk to my body when I go to sleep at nighttime and just tell me, we've had a good run, and we've had a lot of fun. And you've served me well, and I've tried to serve you well. And if you're just tired, and you know what the future could lie, you know, I mean, I'm stretching this out longer than I'm talking to the body, and if you don't want to wake up in the morning, please don't. So you asked the question about when tattooing made its transition?
Yeah.
When it crossed over from drunken sailors and fallen women, supposedly, you know, they have to have, everything has to have a tag or a title. Right. And so it was drunken sailors, fallen women. And then, so what put tattooing on the map was women's liberation.
Really?
Name me an industry that all of a sudden one half of the human race was opened up for my service. Because that was in the late 60s, early 70s. So I'm a product of timing, actually. I got more publicity. It'll never happen to another tattoo artist until the end of time, I believe, because unless tattooing falls on completely bad times and is now back in the drunken sailor fallen women category, and then it has a renaissance of some type, like it did in the late 60s. But it was women's liberation.
Wow.
There was a couple of items that led up to it, but tattooing was always sort of... I say that my museum is dedicated to the art that art history forgot.
The art that art history forgot. That's a good line.
Wish I'd have thought of it. Somebody that, Josh Goldman, used to work for me, he come up with that line. It's a good one.
Yeah. You know, when I did my Modern Primitives book way back when, I started the project around 81 or 2, and it didn't come out till 89. I sort of, in a weird way, I have a sense of humor, believe it or not, and I kind of thought of the project as kind of a prank. It wasn't 100% serious because I thought, what if we gave every possible reason to get tattooed and, even worse, bodily pierced, all these kinds of body piercings? What if we gave every reason in favor of it, historical, anthropological, sociological, and none of the negative reasons that you mostly read about in mainstream press? What would happen? And darned if I think a whole renaissance of tattooing happened and body piercing, which no one had heard of.
Well, that Modern Primitive, that was a monumental literary work. I mean, you know, you had a lot of information in that.
Well, why do you suppose that you don't think another tattooist could ever become as famous or get as much publicity as you?
What happened was that tattooing had been a blue-collar art, predominantly male, and I mean predominantly male. You might tattoo a woman once in a while, but it was a sort of under the guise with a man. He got her name, she got his name, or something in that order. But tattooing is more ideal for women, I think, than it is for men. I mean, ladies like to curl their hair, paint their toenails, and augment everything in between. And so guys, they want to, it's more of a status symbol to them. Big eagle on the arm, down the pool hall, or something in that order. And tattooing has been connected with the warrior class for thousands of years, long before recorded history. The ancients, somewhere along the line, figured out that the tattooed warriors had a better survival rate in battle than the ones that were untattooed, because when you're tattooing, you're entering a foreign matter into the skin, and sterilization back in those days was just unheard of, and it boosted up your antibody systems. So if you have a stronger antibody system than somebody else and you're wounded, you've got a better survival rate. Plus, then if somebody jumped up around a bush with a big spear and he had tattoos all over his face and everything else, he would look pretty, you know, awesome. And so there was that factor of it, too.
The fear factor.
So tattooing actually was the first preventive medicine. Tattooing's been around at the first of a lot of different things that people don't know. But we will edify them this morning. Well, I used to lecture to dermatologists in universities. And because I know more about skin than they do. And they know all the technical terms, of course, but Latin and all that. But I come up with that theory about the warriors. And it's a theory, because when you go back before and according to history, everything's theory. And it very well could have been, and I'm sure it was, and it was for that reason. But they'd sit out there, and you could just see that when you're contacting people in the audience, you can always see the little eyes going like this. You're getting through to them.
Well, gee, what would you present to these dermatologists? I'm curious about that. How would you do a presentation that would be scientifically acceptable to these medical, you know, specialists?
Without initials on the back of your name.
Exactly.
Well, it was just through reputation, and I'm sure that wasn't a class that they got a grade on.
Okay.
Because it was usually like student unions. So it was on more of an entertainment level than it was technical level, but still, they was picking up, and they was there. And I always had a bumper crop.
What's a bumper crop?
A bumper crop is it's a farming term. A bumper crop is when the audience is full. And, you know, or if a bumper crop is when you had the best crop you can in your fields.
But You know, I would have expected you to get a lot of very negative questioning on the sort of
Oh, I do.
bad effects of tattooing
Oh, and
on
I love it.
skin.
I love it. Love nailing them to the cross.
The cross of their own making?
Yeah. One that they built from a set of 1923 Poplar Mechanics plans.
Well, I mean, what do they say, these physicians, these people with MD degrees in dermatology, do they say that, I don't know, tattooing shortens their lifespan in some way? What do they say?
They wind up, you know, I mean, it's like an officer and a gentleman in the service. You know, they got this, they're above the enlisted men. Hmm. And all doctors get a Jesus Christ complex. And so they are, so they have to talk about pigments and, you know, and then get on the moral issue.
Oh, the moral issue.
Yes, and each of the six major religions in the world have a boogaboo about tattooing.
Oh, they do.
In fact, we maybe should talk about that.
Oh, yeah, let's do.
If we aren't.
Okay, I would like to hear this. I thought there are only three major religions, but I guess I'm in the Western world. Let's see, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
In some of your Oriental philosophies, they have something, but then your Buddhists get tattooed also. In fact, it's taken to a high degree.
Oh, really?
Of prayers and mantras and things. I don't know if mantras are connected with the Buddhists or not, but so they have prayers tattooed all over their back. There's a lot of American tattoo artists go over to Thailand and get tattooed.
Yeah, so Let's explore that idea of the proscription against tattooing by the major religions. Why would they do that?
You know, if a religion can get you to obey them, then you're in their hand. And they're all about control.
Right.
I mean, maybe somewhere along the line, the first guy thought, well, we'll dream up a god and do some good with it. But it never progressed further than that. So that's part of a control tactic. Leviticus and the dribble from the Bible, the old
the
rewritten
Bibble.
Camel Writer's Manual, they call a Bible. It has written in there that there'll be no more cuttings for the dead. Well, the old Semites used to, a mother die or they was suffering anguish of some type, they would take a sharp stone and they would cut themselves, flagellize themselves, and cause themselves physical pain to relieve internal emotional pain. Hmm. So that wasn't too rational, that act. So the church banned it in that direction. Hmm. Then all these, as he rewrote the Bible, interpolation, I think it's called, a forging of holy manuscripts by a bunch of old monks up there living a cloistered life in celibacy, which would drive anybody nuts. they changed the stuff around. And so it wound up that I think there's 27 mentions about marking the skin because the word tattoo is only a little over 200 years old.
Oh.
In the European languages. Mm-hmm. And it came out of Captain Cook's journal. And he wrote in there that the natives had strange blue markings on their skin, such as the Barbary pirates, which occupied the southern shores of the Mediterranean. Mm. The Barbary pirates, Barbarossa and a few others, you know, and a few thousand others, I'm sure. And so that was a reference, but it was tattoo. Mm. And then we always put things in the slang or something, and it came up tattoo. Hmm. There was a European word tattoo that was in the Dutch language, and tattoo is a drum beat that is beat 15 minutes before taps, which is 15 minutes before 10. And tattoo is show to quarters. Taps at 10 o'clock is lights out. So, but it didn't have any connection with markings on the skin. Tattoo, you know, it's neither good or bad, right or wrong. It's not practiced by ogres. It's, but it is a practice that people you know, has done for thousands of years in,
right.
it, around the globe. I don't believe it was developed in any one certain spot. It's very easy to discover. In fact, probably everybody in the whole world has had a friend in school that's somehow accidentally stuck himself with a lead pencil.
Yeah.
And when they retrieve it, there's a certain amount of that charcoal will stay there and cause a little round wound. And that is sort of something that helps get the religious magic context that tattooing has today. Because as a tattoo artist, you're the closest thing to a witch doctor that they're ever going to get in this modern world.
Wow, I never thought of that.
It's what you got me here for.
I know. You can go a whole day, Lyle, without getting a new thought, unfortunately. Or even go weeks without learning a new word. You know, I do remember that I did look up tattooing ages ago in the dictionary, and it had to do with a rhythmic drum beat. And in fact, a rhythmic drum pattern can be called a tattoo, just like there's a rhythmic pattern to applying an ink tattoo.
That's where that European, that Dutch word, and the Polynesian word sort of crosses trails, because that was a U.S. military blows bugles. Mm. In Holland, they had drum beats, so that would be your... And then, but in the South Seas, like in Samoan places where they're tattooing manually by hand, they've got a in Samoa, let's take that for instance, because the instruments vary from country to country or island to island, but it's got a handle about this long, and it's like a garden hoe. And it comes out, goes down this way, and they dip it into the ink, which is made out of a charcoal from candle nut. And they dip it into that, they lay it on the skin, and then they have another stick about this long. And believe it or not, I think that the universal word worldwide is ow.
Ouch.
Ouch, which turns into ow. And this stick that they, the striker, is called an ow. So they sit there and they beat, and it's wood against wood. And you do get a beat, and there is a, because I've listened to it for hours, you know, and I've thought about, you know, that should be recorded, and somebody should put music to it, but anyhow, with the, it's the owl, and they strike it, and they use boar's tusks that they cut down. There's a certain coral over there, they go get it, and it's only... In one place in the Samoan Islands that you can find is one type of coral.
They use it for the sharp point.
They use it actually for making that boar's tusk head that goes on there that actually goes into the skin. With electric tattooing that we use today, we use stainless steel needles, a cluster of needles, different configurations depending on the pattern that you want. But over there, it's the instruments vary from about a quarter of an inch up to about 2 inches. And they use a boar's tusk, and then they go ahead and they cut it down. And with this piece of coral, it's round, but then they'll go ahead and make like a file shape out of it.
Oh.
And it takes a long time to make one of those.
Right.
And now, with this modern day and age, I've got a set in the museum that somebody's used a piece of clear lucite. To hold the boar's tusk down there. And then it's woven on, and I'm sure it was with some kind of a fiber, you know, before the advent of, before we discovered them. I always get a kick out of this because people get discovered by New World explorers, and they didn't know they were lost.
Right. Yeah, Columbus discovered America.
Right. They didn't know they were lost.
Yeah. A colonizing word, a word of colonization. Yeah, well, you know, Lyle, you got tattooed in Samoa way back when. How did that happen? How did that even happen?
I was tattooing here in San Francisco, and most of my career has been spent in San Francisco. And there was these large, heavy-boned people would come in, dark skin, and every one of them love tattooing. They just had an adoration for it. And I found out they were from Samoa. Hmm. In fact, it was a couple come in with two kids one day, and the man got tattooed, and there was another fellow with him. He was dressed up sort of in a suit. We wanted him to be a preacher. And, you know, he loved tattoos. And I thought, a preacher that likes tattoos, and the mother likes tattoos, and the kids like tattoos. They all like tattoos. I got to go there someday. So, of course, I looked up in an atlas, found out where Samoa was, 12 degrees north of the equator, and sitting out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Boy, it's about as isolated as you can get.
Wow.
And so I went over there. Well, I made contacts.
Yeah.
And then I went over there. I flew over there.
You flew.
Well, you've got a big international airport there. In fact, the last Pan Am flight that crashed out in the South Pacific umpteen years ago, that was in Samoa. They crashed on landing. Coming in.
So you made contacts, and then you flew over.
I flew over there and got tattooed, but what I'd done before then, a pants design in Samoa, they call, I don't know if I have to have a drink of water to say this word. The word is pronounced pea. Pea. It's hard to have an English conversation and then put in pea. A pea is a dress, so you don't want to be running around saying you got a pea. Be like telling some guy you got a dress on. It's pea. And a pea is that large fruit-eating bat over there. So in the small of the back, what starts off with the design comes up like this with two lines right underneath the aureolus and comes around, and it's a war canoe. Then underneath that is a V shape, and that's the pea. That's the bat. So, and the bat is nicknamed a flying fox over there. And so they do call the tattoo they get also a flying fox. On the Malaysian Peninsula, there's, I don't know the name of the tribe now, or the grouping of people that get something like a pair of pants tattooed on them. In South America, there's some people in the Amazon that do the same thing. No, I don't. And then the Samoans, and it's just a design that goes from high on the waist to the knees, and then right around, and then a spare coming down here, and then right over the belly button, there's a little design put there, and they call it a puki. You can get the puki first, or you can get it last. And in your modern primitives, I told a story about a man that wound up getting the whole tattoo. Then he had the pookie put on, and he had a herniated navel. And when he hauled up and whacked it, he bled to death. Went through all that hell getting that tattoo and then died. He should have got it first.
Well, he might have died.
There might
then.
Be a moral to that story, but I don't know what it is.
Wow. So, in other words, there are practitioners still doing it the ancient way with the ancient instruments in Samoa to this day.
Yes, there's a renaissance. I hate the word renaissance in a way, but there's a resurgency. Let's see, of old culture. That's happening in it died out completely all through Polynesia. The Marquesas Islands and through there is run by uptight French Catholics, you know. Tattooing was just boogaboo. Gauguin went down and tried to paint, couldn't do it, had to leave. And so they absolutely killed the practice of tattooing in the Marquesas Islands. If they didn't agree with it, and I'm not talking about just that particular nation and that particular religion, but any religion doesn't like something, they're going to expunge it. I mean, it's they burned down all those the navigational weavings they have over there for being able to travel from island to island and everything else. They burned those because, you know, but back up to the monasteries and celibacy drive you crazy. So at least it would me.
Now, whenever missionaries come in, I think they try and completely exterminate all the cultural artifacts.
Yeah,
because you know why? Partly because the so-called culture is tied in with the so-called religion, and they're trying to kill the native religions.
Sure, yeah. To make their God bigger. God's on our side.
Yeah.
But we're made in God's image, and boy, is he screwed up. Could you say screw on this program?
I think so.
Okay.
Wow. So it was kind of a historical voyage for you, your whole lifespan of tattooing as well, because I'm sure you didn't start out tattooing. How did you start out, as a matter of fact? That's hardly anyone starts out being a tattoo artist, especially way back then.
Well, I live in the house I was raised in today.
In Ukiah.
In Ukiah, and that's 120 miles north of San Francisco. I said on a radio interview one night, you go across the Golden Gate Bridge and you keep going north until you don't hear anything. And I got admonished for that a couple times from people in Ukiah. What are you talking bad about Ukiah for? I said, I wasn't talking bad about Ukiah. I'm saying going across the Golden Gate Bridge and going till you don't hear nothing is not saying something bad. That is saying something good for it.
Mm-hmm. So back to how you had the courage or whatever it took to even start being a tattoo artist.
Well, I was born in 1931, so I'm 75 now.
Okay.
And I was a wee one, about that tall, when they had the Golden Gate International Exposition in Treasure Island, 1939.
Oh, yeah.
In 1939, they was having the World's Fair in New York City, and we was having the International Golden Gate Exposition here. And we went to it. My parents brought me down. I think it was about 8. And I looked across the bay, and I saw those tall buildings and bright lights, and I knew that there was some chicanery going on over there that was never thought about in Ukiah, California. And I was raised by great parents. Could not have had better parents, but they were conservative people that were raised on farms in Iowa. But they allowed me to take a bus trip when I was 14. And I didn't. I was just coming down to see the big city, not to get tattooed or anything else. But my first recollections of tattooing was servicemen coming back from World War II. Mm. And you'd see a tattoo on somebody's arm or this, that, and the other thing. And like I said before about the being tattooing connected with the warrior class, it still is, but it's still connected with a camaraderie. If you're in a unit with people, it's a bonding method of tattooing. Like back in the 60s and 70s with the communes, they would get a like design. Or, you know, I mean, better way to show your dedication to something than to have it indelibly emblazoned on your skin forever. You know, now the forever is a shorter word than it used to be because they have laser removals nowadays that work really well. But tattoos are only for very stable people. If you're a vacillator and you change your mind daily or something, I wouldn't recommend getting a tattoo because you're going to be face looking at something. You're going to say, boy, that is going to be there a long time.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be a big problem getting off. So it's only for us stable people.
Rather than the cliched, which is the opposite, that they're only for marginals.
Yeah, the trendy group. And I think tattooing today is really trendy. Tattooing to me almost is a finger down the throat anymore. it's too popular. I mean, and it is trendy. You can't go anywhere without seeing a tattoo. I liked it when somebody'd find out that you were a tattoo artist, they'd say, you what? You can make a living doing that? I mean, I loved that.
So way back in 1939 and then your bus trip.
1946 is when that bus trip happened. And it was World War II was just over, like 1 year. I don't know the month that I came down in 1946. I found out a 14-year-old kid that looked like about a 9-year-old girl could drink Coca-Colas, could get a shoe shine. There wasn't very many avenues. But the most important thing was to keep an eye on that bus station. Do not let that bus station get away from you, because that is the exit point to get out of this place, you know. So in my travels, I was setting up getting a shoe shine, and I looked back at this arcade, and it was a magic word. It was T-A-T-T-O-I-N-G, tattooing. And I cut a trail the minute that shoes were shined and went back there, and I looked in there, and the guy said, "What in the hell do you want?" I went, you know. And I wound up getting a tattoo.
At that age, was it legal?
There was a California state law. I still got the tattoo. It's a heart with mother.
And can't go wrong with that, I guess.
Well, it probably kept me from getting my butt paddled when I got home. Who knows? But, you know, my parents, I mean, they were conservative Iowa farm folk. But sure, they were wonderful. And they never, my mom didn't admonish me. I waited until 2 weeks till I'd all healed up and got nice, and showed it to her. And she's all, "You got that when you went to San Francisco." And I said, "How'd you know?" And she says, "Your arm sticking out of the bed clothing." When she'd go in and wake me up, I'd be out there with this, you know, a mum would have to notice that. So I started collecting a few more, and every chance I got, I went to San Francisco. It's totally screwed my education up, because I had tattoo static in my mind. And there was just some kind of an innate pull to it, a draw. I mean, it was... So if you think about it, how many thousands of generations did it take to get us sitting at this table? Thousands. So of all these thousands of generations of people, of our relatives, lineage, and tattooing has been known in every ancient and modern civilization, how many of those ancestors were heavily tattooed or something? And there is genetic remembrance. There's things that's instilled in us, in our brain, that maybe it's stronger in me, where another person wouldn't. You know, you have your heritage. I mean, tattooing is important part of that culture.
Japan.
Other than you never become a yakuza.
No, it is odd how, I don't know the history of how tattooing started in Japan, the land of my ancestors, but boy, there sure is some gorgeous work done in Japan.
In about 1000 AD, there was a conquering army come over from China, and one of the generals wrote in there that all the people that he confronted, because they were tribes, it was a nation, and that the ones that were had markings on their skin was the tough ones. And so there was a tribe over there that he confronted and fought that were tattooed. And then up in the Hokkaido, which is the top island in Japan, they have the Ainus there, and the Ainu women tattoo on the mouth.
Right.
And that's a traditional thing going back. But where the tattoo renaissance is happening today is mainland China.
Oh, wait. Okay, so just tell me, fill in the blanks, as to how you morphed from being the recipient of tattoos to the maker of tattoos, because there's got to be some art and craft developed for that to happen.
I think if you probably got saved in a religion, you'd want to go out and spread the word, wouldn't you? Probably the same way, I don't know.
Wait, you had to have drawing lessons or something. Tattoo is essentially drawing
it
on skin.
Yeah, and drawing and art is, the basis of it is proportion. So I've always been a good proportionalist, because I remember that I thought that kids that went to, when I was going to high school, the 3 years I went, that the kids that went to art class was sissies.
Oh.
You know, How do you get grease under your fingernails in art class? You know, because I was out in auto mechanics working on cars and stuff. Mm-hmm. And but Mrs. Shore, the teacher, would always send for me because I was always a good proportionalist. So I would, they wanted to do some kind of a banner for this Sadie Hawkins Day or something like that. And so they needed a little Abner type and a busty female or something on there. Well, I could just sketch it out and give them the proportion. But my father was a contractor, so I don't know if that proportion came from the building trade or growing up in construction or what it was, but it was just something I had. And tattoo-wise, I never was a Rembrandt. I can look at a picture and copy it, give it a fair facsimile. Nowadays, they have copy of Xerox machines that you can raise and lower the percentage.
Right.
I've never worked in a shop that had that, I think. Well, I don't want to go back to tattooing. I tattoo one tattoo a day on somebody, an autograph. I do it free, just for tattooing being so good to me. And then I secretly tell them, send me 5% of your income because I got the mark on you. But nobody's done it yet.
The royalty. So you didn't really have a childhood career doing a lot of drawing and painting and all
that? No, I was more into constructing things.
Okay. But still, how did you take the big step of opening up your own shop? I mean, that isn't...
I cut school every chance I got because I thought that school was an unnatural act for a red-blooded American boy and for openers. And so I would cut school, and anybody that had an automobile, I tried to get them to cut school with me till we could go to San Francisco. And so I swept a lot of tattoo shops out, polished a lot of apples, making friends to get in, because at that time, tattooing anybody that wanted to be a tattoo artist was somebody was telling you, I want to furnish competition to you.
Oh, right.
In a business that isn't really excelling.
Right.
So I called it the brick wall. When you went in with that story, I want to be a tattoo artist, you hit the brick wall.
Right.
Now you can go down and buy magazines and, the internet. You know, the great homogenizer of the human race, the internet, is going to, you can just go find out anything you want to know. Google it. In fact, I'm the president of tattoos.com. Have you ever been on that site?
This morning.
Okay. How many, did you look and see how many mentions there was for tattooing, or did you just go directly to tattoos.com?
How many are there?
The last time I looked, I was given a little sales pitch because I'm the president of it, so I'm sort of like the road representative in public relations. I put the word Googled the word tattoo, and it was 44,800,000 mentions of tattooing on that internet. But on the top line was my company. Pow.
Tattooswithans.com.
You can also put in tattoo.com, but we prefer to use it will go to us. So there's a great interest in it. So now, I don't know, 96, I was quoted in a interview, and in fact that was how I got involved with tattoos.com. I said that the internet's going to turn the world into a bowl of oatmeal, and a bowl of oatmeal only has dark brown and light brown spots in it. It just homogenizes everything. I mean everything needs to be homogenized. We need to be just dark brown, light brown spots. I mean, population explosion and all that stuff.
So who gave you the money to actually rent a storefront and start a shop?
Well, I worked for people first.
You actually did apprentice?
The word apprentice connected with tattooing is a new term. Generally, prostitutes are turned out and tattoo artists are broke in. So that's what that was the term. You break some, you know, you broke somebody in tattooing. You know, they can't teach you the art. Art school only teaches you vocabulary. So you can talk a good story. So it's, and tattooing is a mechanical art because it's put on with an electromagnetic machine, and you need to learn that. So they can teach you that. They can teach you the mixing and manipulation of pigments and things and technique. But as far as the art, they can't teach you that. So I hit the brick wall, and it was a old character here in San Francisco by the name of C.J. Pop Eddy. He's about 75 years old or so. And tattooing in the 20s, the 30s, tattooing really flourishes during wartime. And back to the warrior thing. So there's that genetic remembrance, maybe. And then there's the camaraderie and the bonding of units and things that makes tattooing popular. So I went to every tattoo artist that was in and around the Bay Area, which was a handful.
Right.
And it wound up at Brick Wall. My dad was building a school in Lakeport, California, and a guy that was the glazer, or put the windows and all the, you know, the glass in, his name was Eddie. And I was talking to him one day, and I said, there's a tattoo artist in San Francisco named Pop Eddie. He said, hell, that's my brother.
Oh.
That was my end.
Hmm.
So at least got me the introduction to Pop Eddie, and we went from there. And so a lot of it, if you get a hold of the equipment and get the basic instructions and have somebody that you can go to, tattooing is almost a self-taught profession. There's people that wind up serving a five-year apprenticeship or anything else, but it's way too long unless they're a moron.
You know, the first time that I went to your studio, it was practically next door to the Greyhound bus station in San Francisco on 7th Street, and I wondered if that was a coincidence or was that design?
Well, you know, the three most important potions for a successful business is location, location, location. And before, when I first got into tattooing, tattoo shops were just a crib that was in an arcade.
Yeah.
And you work by a percentage or a flat rate. Sometimes some of the guys, they collect the rent every day.
The people who rent you the shop?
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, you go in the morning and you give them the money to work in that spot that day, you know.
Huh.
It's all your stuff and everything. And then I've owned arcades down the line and have my tattoo shop in there. So when I came to San Francisco, I tattooed up in Alaska. I was in Long Beach, California, tattooing.
Oh.
And I went to Alaska and tattooed up there for about 4 months. And I came back. And I had tattooed in Oakland also.
Oh.
And San Francisco at that time had a 21 age limit.
Minimum. You had to be 21 to
get it. You had to be 21 to get tattooed. I believe Hawaii today is 20. But most places is 18. And I think that that's fair. That, you know, at least you're starting to become aware of awareness at 18.
Yeah.
So probably we should set it 50 or something because people are wacky anyhow and they don't know what they
want. You
mean
50?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, maybe now that should be 50.
Right, so in 10 years you can get one.
Thanks.
Okay, so anyhow, they wound up that it kept a lot of people out of San Francisco because of that 21 age limit, because there's a lot of people between 18.
Right.
So I was tattooing over in Oakland, and then I decided I was going to come to San Francisco. And I thought, you know, the California state law is 18, and how can you can't supersede a higher governmental agency. So it's like you can't actually legalize marijuana in the state of California, which it's always voted on legalizing it is. It's because the federal government has a law against it.
Hmm.
So California can't say yes and the government's saying no.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured I'd just come over here and just play dumb and abide by the state law, which is a fair law, I feel, of 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, never had any problems. Mm. So 20 years later, or probably less than that, maybe 15 years later, San Francisco wanted to rewrite their health regulations.
Mm.
And so I went in and helped do that. And so the director of the health department was reading down the manifesto, and about three or four paragraphs down it says 21 age limit. And he stopped and thought for a minute. He looked at me and he said, isn't the state law 18? And I said, yes. He said, well, how can we supersede that?
Oh, great.
That was it. That was, you know, I could have went up there and lobbied and everything else, mm-hmm. but it just worked out perfect.
Wow. And, so you did that somehow.
Well,
got
I was in there.
Changed.
I was in there, you know, because they're doctors and things, but they don't know about my profession.
Right.
I used to every 6 months have a seminar to train OSHA inspectors about tattooing.
Hmm.
Because they know about this, that, and the other thing, but they don't know the idiosyncrasies of the equipment or the equipment or what's used.
Right.
Or anything else. So how can they can go in and check the bathroom and they'll give you A-OK on that, but they couldn't go in and look at your equipment and mm-hmm. tell. And then they're also health inspectors sometimes. There's some of the canopy of beauty shops, massage parlors, pool halls. I don't know, pool halls, but... And then tattoo shops are all in the... So I did that for about, I don't know, half a dozen times. Did it every 6 months. So I was in San Francisco and was the only tattoo artist here for years. And I believe somebody told me that there is 50 tattoo shops that advertise in the Yellow Pages.
In San Francisco alone?
Just in San Francisco alone.
Wow. So you had a pretty big shop next to the Greyhound bus station, which implies, of course, that a lot of your clientele got off the bus or it was a very central location. Let's put it that way.
You want to be near, I think you should be near a landmark. When I first moved, I was in that place for 29 and a half years.
Wow.
When I first moved in, I used to say that I was next to the Greyhound bus station. After about 25 years, they started saying that they was next to Lyle Tuttle's tattooing. Well, it was a landmark in the city. It really
it was huge, and you had a lot of art on the walls.
Yeah. Well, I had the museum up there also.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It was. I had two stories of an office building.
You also had a shop for a while in Hollywood, I thought, in the 60s.
You know, I did. It was actually, I opened it up in 1970 and sold it in 1976.
Mm. To capitalize on all the stars starting to get tattoos.
That was it, because Janis Joplin came through my shop.
Oh, yeah. Who are the most famous people who came through your shop?
Well, Adolf Hitler, Jesus Christ. real famous people. Well, a lot of stars.
Mama Cass.
No, not Mama. I didn't tattoo Mama Cass, but...
She got a tattoo.
Yeah. Bill Graham said that the favorite pastime with the musicians at concerts in the green room when they was getting ready to go on was showing their tattoos off.
Hmm.
And Frank Zappa loved to kiss them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So women's liberation came along, and then all of a sudden, the press got enamored with tattooing because of women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and most of them are male writers, and tattooing was, in those days, they still wanted to be a little bit conservative with it, so they would have it like on the breast.
Butterflies,
rosebuds. That was probably about the two most popular ones. Where a bra would cover it up, or on the shoulder, lower front, in, like down inside of a panty line or a bikini line. So that ran the press nuts about that. I made a joke. I was in more panties than gynecologists. And it was, which was true. And it was the idea that I've dealt with so many women that captured the press's imagination. Yes. And then publicity, as you know, is like a stair step. One writer will read another article and say, that's a good idea for an article. Boom, boom, boom. It's like going up a ladder. And it had never happened that it was something new and fresh and unexploited by the press. And the printed word is the most powerful word because it stays there. Television, radio, that's just a flash in the pan. It's there, it's gone. But that printed word, well, good example, it hangs around in doctors' offices for months. Ann Calvella, roller derby queen here for years. She passed away maybe 6 months ago. She was in Cincinnati skating and was down getting physiotherapy on her knee. And she picked up an old time magazine and was thumbing through it. And here's an article about this guy in San Francisco tattooing. And she's not from San Francisco. So the minute she got to San Francisco, she cut a trail down to my tattoo shop. And she was a triple Leo. So I wound up putting three lions on her. So it's most of me. It was on all the big TV shows and things, but it's I believe that printed word is the one. And it's something that's tangible that they can see, hold, feel.
I hate to ask you, but do you think modern primitives had an effect that aided your tattooing in general and your career in particular?
You know, I was a made man by the time modern primitives come out. But no, but modern primitives did a lot of good. And it presented tattooing in a wholesome light, even though you had the word I can't mention again. But it's, yes. You know, anything that's put in a positive light, or sometimes even a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek with something does it good also. Because tattooing is like the avant-garde no-no, always has been. Kids going off to be in the service, and he gets on the Greyhound bus, and his mother is forcing the door open, saying, don't get tattooed, the last thing that she says to him. Well, it's understandable why mothers don't care about tattoos so much, because a child is the mother's ultimate artwork. That's her creation. And no artist likes to have their artwork altered by another artist. That's one man's humble opinion.
Well, let's face it, as you said yourself, there's a huge rise and increase of tattoo removal by laser for a reason.
Because it's those unstable people, those vacillators out there that are getting tattoos because it's a trendy item. You know, a tattoo is external decorations for internal feelings.
And philosophy.
Yes, philosophy or something. I mean, people say, you know, what's the weirdest tattoos you put on? You know, well, it isn't, there is not a spot in the human body that I haven't tattooed. But it's philosophy that gets me down. I mean, things that people want on them. I mean, one guy came in one time and he had plus Christ equals minus fear. Minus Christ equals plus fear. Let's see. One guy come in, I didn't bother to ask him, truthfully. I put on which is a BS story anyhow, that man's rib made a woman.
Oh, right.
So he had written on his lower rib.
Rib.
Rib. I have no sister.
That's weird.
That was weird to the point I didn't even ask him why. He had took off on that tangent, you know?
Right.
So, and then getting out back east, it isn't as popular back here, but there's a lot of Catholics back here, Catholics in the east, Italian origin and things, Christ heads and things, very popular. Mexicans, they like to get the Guadalupe.
Right. So, you've been involved with at least the 20th, late 20th century, huge popularization of tattoos, and you just went to Beijing, which I didn't even sus which is to a lot of people, China is the future of the planet. And so you're involved in the future of tattooing, both with tattoos.com, which gets millions of hits practically daily, and also you went to the second International Beijing Tattoo Convention.
Well, tattooing's always sort of been, it's a mild rebellion in a way. They always talk about psychiatrists, about tattoo people are rebellious and this, that, and the other thing. But it's a way to introduce change into your life in one way, too. I mean, because like tattooing is not good or bad, right or wrong, not practiced by ogres. It's just something that people have done through the ages.
Wow. Well, gee, that seems like a good time to end the Counterculture Hour. Today, our guest was Lyle Tuttle, who's really one of the, at least media-created, godfathers of tattooing in America. So thank you very much, Lyle, for being on the Counterculture Hour.
Thanks for having me here.